Okay, I was on mute that whole time. I went through all of the short track stuff and just to realize I was on mute. Welcome to the show, Sal.
Oh, thank you, Sharon. It's okay.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and go over some of the short track information very quickly. David Gavel in the World of Outlaw Sprint Cars inherited the race lead after an incident for leader Sheldon Hawden's child. It was, and he held on to it from there to win at the U.S. 36 Raceway. Alex Knighton writes about that over at World of Outlaws. Hawdenschild bounced back on Saturday, taking Jason Johnson Classic at Arrowhead Speedway. That's also over at the worldofoutlaws.com. And then a couple of rainouts. The USAC Mother Nature prevailed at Red Hill Raceway. The planned sprint car race on April 6th was a washout. And also at High Limit Racing's rained-out race at Riverside International Speedway has a new date. That date is April the 23rd and will be available via live streaming over at Flow Racing. Sal, you want to take the short track news there?
Yeah, I'm still trying to get...
Okay, I can take it then. The Car Store Teenage Sensation Connor, huh?
It's not on the. Oh, here it is.
It's on.
I'm sorry, Sharon.
Yeah,
I found it. Okay, so where'd you leave off at?
I did the dirt. You need to do short tracks.
Okay, so you want me to do all the short tracks?
Yeah, just those three that are right there.
Oh, okay, all right, yeah. So on short tracks. We got the Car Store Teenage Sensation. Connor Zilish added a new victory to his resume, taking his first Car Store late model stock car victory at Hickory Motor Speedway. Matt Weaver wrote about that. You can find all that on Short Track C. He has a lot of good stuff. And also the Pro All-Star Series, Derek Griffith took advantage of a late restart to snap a victory at Thompson Speedway Motorsports Park. Jeff Brown, who also contributes to Short Track Scene, is covered on that story. And then at the Icebreaker, Thompson Speedway saw its third straight Icebreaker weekend scuppered by weather. Maybe they should try calling it the Rainbreaker. Jeff Brown is Short Track Scene. And then there was another race up here in Washington. It was the Apple Cup that had 31 Super Late Model entries. And Garrett Evans at the ripe old age of 64 years old beat Cole Raz and Preston Peltier, were two of the top stars that were racing this past weekend, and ended up taking, I think this was a fifth Apple Cup victory.
Wow, that's awesome. Tim Sozio secured his first victory for the UARA series. The sportsman win at Auburndale. That's the old SRL National, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, that's, as a matter of fact, Cordell is the one that Ricky Brooks is managing. But yes, this is the oh, you know what? You have it in here. I'm sorry, Sharon. I got ahead of you. I just seen it right now. About Garrett Evans.
Yeah. That's okay. That's okay. I had it in there.
Yeah. What a trip. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was really cool to see that happen. Dale Jr. is going to join the Car Store field at New River All-American. You can read all about that over at Racing America and also over at Racing America. Ryan Manthai takes his bucket list car to Bristol for short track racing. All four of those articles are actually over at Racing America. You want to take the next grouping, Sal?
Yeah, then we got a sweet manufacturing race of the week, Jimmy Thomas Memorial at Ames. That's on Flow Racing. And then Isabella Robusto is optimistic ahead of her Cars Tour return. That's a short track scene. Actually, we have a Cars Tour race this weekend at Orindale, but it's going to be the Cars Tours West along with the Cars Baltimore Legends this weekend were happening at Irwindale, but it's not looking too good. We have a 50% chance of rain, so we've gotten this will be our fifth rain out. If it does happen, it'll be our fifth rain out this year.
That's unbelievable.
Out here on the Wasino. And then race forces the rescheduling, postponement of the Thompson Icebreaker.
Yeah, features. That's a repeat, Sal.
Yeah, you can find that on the
Then
Griffin Nabs, third pass Icebreaker, winner late restart, short tracks. We're hoping for clear weather. It seems like we're having nice weather, 80-degree weather, and then all of a sudden it's going to rain on Saturday.
Unbelievable. Well, we had snow last week, so you just never know what's going to happen. And today we watched the eclipse. We only had 90% here in my area in the Midwest, but my son was down in Texas in the Austin area, and they saw the full eclipse. So that was pretty cool.
A friend of ours was supposed to make, Will Lester, the other photographer, was supposed to make the trip out there to Texas, but he didn't go
He
had seen that it was going to be bad weather, so he didn't make the trip after all.
Well, it was supposed to be cloudy, but, even though it was cloudy out there, they still saw a really nice eclipse. It was amazing.
We just see nothing.
So anyway. Okay. We only had a partial eclipse. What was cool about our eclipse, Sal, was that you could see the shadow of the moon on the sun, and you could see the reflection of the sun on the top of the moon. So it was really kind of a weird view. But it was really cool.
Yeah, I didn't have the proper glasses, so I couldn't see it. One of the jobs I was on, the guy did have some glasses, so I looked real quick. But we weren't going to get the full effect anyway. We weren't going to get the full on darkness and all that. We're only going to get like a third of it or something.
Right. Well, when my brother and I went out to Las Vegas last fall, we saw the eclipse out there, too. That was really cool as well. You weren't in Las Vegas that week, were you?
No, I missed it. I missed everything. I missed the race. I missed seeing you guys. I missed the eclipse. I probably missed out on maybe winning $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, maybe even $200,000 gambling. I might have missed out.
Probably. Sal, you should have won that.
I never went.
Okay, real quick, I'm going to give everybody an update on the Arkham and Art Series platform before we move on. They are not racing this weekend. Their next race doesn't happen until April the 20th. And actually, there's going to be two different races on April the 20th. Arkham and Art Series West is going to be racing out at Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway on April the 20th at 11:15 p.m. Eastern Time. I believe that would be 8:15 your time, Sal. And it's going to be available via live streaming on Flow Racing. And then on the same day, but earlier in the day, the Arkham Menard Series is racing the General Tire 200 on April 20th at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And that's out at Talladega Super Speedway. And it will be televised on Fox Sports 1. So my son just posted a new video from that eclipse. I'll have to take a look at that later. And then the ARCA East Menard Series, they are going to be racing the General Tire 150 at Dover Motor Speedway on April 26th at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And that, too, is going to be available on Fox Sports 1. So mark your calendars for all those races. A lot of racing action. Are you going to go to Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway, Sal?
Yeah, as long as it doesn't rain.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't. I've got my fingers crossed. I can't believe how much rain you guys have been having out there.
Oh, it's horrible. It's not even, I mean, it's not even,
it's tying up traffic. It's if you're tying up, you've got construction tying up traffic, you got rain, just all kinds of things going up there.
Yeah, there is. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, I don't know. I'm over it already.
Well, that's good. Are you ready for it to be done and over?
I'm ready for it to be done and over. Hopefully, it's done and over here pretty quick.
Yeah, I don't blame you. All right, next up, I'm going to play the post-race interview from Christian Eckes. He was the winner of the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series. He's the driver of the number 19 McAnally Hilgeman Racing Chevrolet. Sal, did you get to watch that race at all?
Yeah, I watched it.
Oh, cool. He pretty much dominated, but we're going to listen to the post-race interview. It's 7 minutes. We'll have a couple minutes afterward to kind of comment on it.
Right. We are now joined by the winner of tonight's race, Christian Eckes. If you have a question for Christian, please raise your hand and we will get a wireless mic to you. We're going to start in the back right side. My right side.
Jacob Seelman, Race Face Digital. Christian, two for you. First, we heard over the radio right there at halfway that you guys had been committed to trying to win the first two stages and then pitting and seeing where it shook out. Did you plan that coming into the weekend? Was that a race time decision? I mean, ultimately, it worked out regardless for you guys. But
yeah, I mean, we kind of planned that, hoping that stage two would run out and not have so many yellows and hopefully drag some people down with us. But unfortunately, the cautions just kept coming and made our strategy worse and worse. So I'm glad it worked out, but there was definitely some stressful moments in it for sure.
Was that a case where once the caution started falling that could catch you back up after you made passes, that was kind of the key to give you a shot there towards the end?
Yeah, for sure. If the cautions didn't come out, we don't win the race. I think we were 7 seconds behind Majewski whenever that first caution flew, and in sixth, I think we got to. But, man, what a dominant truck to be able to get from 18th to sixth in that short amount of time, for sure.
We're going to go to the back on the left side now.
Nathan Song with the podium finish. Christian, you kind of just talked about it, but can you just kind of touch on that battle with Majewski and then kind of the differing strategies there?
Yeah, I mean, it was super hard racing for sure. I'm sure he enjoyed it as much as he does. He's a short track racer just like me, so that was fun. I felt like, really coming in from practice that, us and the 98 were the best two trucks, and that kind of proved itself in the race for sure. But I definitely think this is probably the best truck I've ever driven in my life.
All right, it's Zach's turn.
Zach Stern, YellowNASCAR.com. Christian, congratulations. That restart with Ty, where you guys are on the front row, I think you had a couple of them, but leaning on each other there, what's going through your mind at that point? Obviously, there's contact at short track racing. What's fair in those moments, and what would have been too far if that wasn't?
I mean, as long as we don't wreck, I'm cool with it. I always like hard racing, so I definitely don't have a problem with that. It was kind of the same thing with me and Kyle at Bristol, so I thought it was fun for sure. I'm sure the fans liked it, and yeah, I didn't really see anything wrong with any of it.
You mentioned too that this might have been the best truck you've ever driven. What made this truck so good? What made tonight such a good night for you and this 19 team?
A lot of hard work. When I first came to MHR last year, our short track program struggled, and it's kind of hard to say that now after I think the last 4 races we've gotten 3 poles and qualified second today and 1, 2, or 3 of them. So it's super, it's an honor for me to be at this race team and to get these fast trucks every week for sure. And yeah, this truck just did everything right. Everything that I've wanted a truck to do at Martinsville, it did tonight for sure. So makes it really easy coming back in the fall for sure.
We'll go to Matt Weaver next.
Matt Weaver, Sportsnet. When you got track position, you were able to drive away, so the truck was clearly really good. If it had come down to a long green flag run, do you think you could have gotten Ty that way regardless?
I don't think so. I mean, 7 seconds is a real big thing to come back from. I don't think we were that good, and I don't think we had enough time to do that. Like I said, we kind of needed the cautions to get us closer, and it's pretty hard to pass here in Martinsville, even with as good of a truck as we do, or we had. We were really the only one that could pass on the outside and make moves as efficiently as we did. So definitely needed those cautions. If the cautions don't fly, like I said, I don't think we win that race. We finished maybe sixth or fifth or fourth or something like that.
We're
going to
come up front to Bob.
Bob Parker, Fox Sports. What would you have considered a good, after knowing where you were when you came out after this caution on the second stage, what would you consider to be a good night?
A top 10, honestly. I was surprised we moved through the field as quickly as we did, because in practice I struggled in traffic pretty badly. So whatever we did from the practice to the race definitely worked, and I was able to move through the field really quickly.
And, I mean, I think besides maybe the 11, it didn't really seem like you had to use your bumper to get by.
Yeah, no, I mean, everybody, I think, understood how strong our truck was and got out of the way. Yeah, I mean, Corey and just kind of raced a little probably too hard.
We're going to go to the second row with Davey.
Davey Siegel with SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. The strategy aspect to it, it seemed like you were kind of hesitant on it, and to your point, you weren't expecting to come through the field that quick. When did you realize that you may have a truck capable of getting up to the front, and did you have an idea that you would be able to get all the way up to the front?
I felt like when the caution came out and we got to six that we had a shot. It's really hard to pass, like I said, but you know, just being that close, you know, that's a couple restart moves away from getting the lead. So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. Whenever that caution flew and we were running sixth or whatever, coming from 18th in that decent stretch of green flag laps and got caught back up, I felt like we had a decent shot for sure.
And given where the second race here falls playoff-wise later in the year, where does that leave you confidence-wise? I know we're a long way away, but just knowing how well you guys were able to perform tonight and how important that race is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm extremely confident in this truck. I'm assuming we're bringing the same one back. I wish we could just keep it here and come back in the fall and race it. But, yeah, no, super good truck. And, like I said, probably the best truck I've ever driven as far as speed and grip-wise. So I'm sure we can get a little bit better, though, when I come back.
We're going to come to the left side.
All right. Win here at BTW 21. With all the history that's going on this weekend, does this make this victory probably one of the biggest ones with all the attention that's on Martinsville this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, it's huge for me, for sure. I mean, I've always wanted a grandfather clock. I got close in 2019 in the fall race, and that was probably the closest I've been in 5 years. So it feels good to come here and finally get one. And like I've touched on before, I'm just really happy where we're at as far as the race team.
Any additional questions for Christian? All right. Thank you so much, and congratulations.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, Sal. Pretty good interview from Christian Eckes, the winner of the Craftsman Truck Series race on Friday night. He made some really good points in there. You know, the fact that they race Martinsville twice a year and racing against another short track racer, Ty Majeski, and, you know, having a lot of confidence in his team and his truck. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, it was I'll tell you, he was dominant. I mean, you know, there was nobody, you know, that could really keep up with him. His strategy was really crazy. You know, I thought, you know, only pitting once, you know, for the whole race, you know, and, you know, still being as dominant as he was. But, you know, like he said, you know, they came in with the game plan. They stuck to it. And, man, he was just wicked fast. I mean, he was,
well, you know,
nobody
could keep up with him.
Nah,
yeah.
Nobody could. And
it makes me wonder. He kept his composure. He showed a lot of signs to me that were signs of a champion, you know, overcoming the negative things that happen or the bad things that happen. They were able to overcome that, keeping their composure, staying focused and going out there and doing what they needed to do, giving the right feedback. Just a lot of really good things we saw from Christian Eckes on Friday night.
Well, he's got a lot of, you got to remember, he has a lot of short track experience too.
Yeah.
You know, racing, you know, super late models, you know, so when he comes into something like this, it's going to play into his, play into his hand.
Mm-hmm.
It was a all around good race. They did a good job, managing the truck, and like he said, the drivers, were, the racers around him, I'm surprised, it was a team race. It wasn't one of them bang up, crash them up,
Yes, I like that aspect of it as well, Sal. It was a good race to watch.
Yeah, it was.
There were still things going on throughout the track, but I'm really excited for Christian Eckes. I think he definitely deserved to get that win. I'm kind of anxious to see what else he does throughout the season. Like I say, I thought I saw some good things from him as far as championship caliber things. But I'm just wondering, like you pointed this out, that it's a short track. He's a short track racer. He was racing against another short track racer, Ty Majeski. But can he do that on some of the bigger tracks?
Yeah, you know what? And I mean, not taking nothing away from Ty. I know Ty. I've seen him race a lot. He's won a lot of big short track races. But I don't know how to say it.
He's not a closer.
He's not the Christian Eckes type of driver. I mean,
mm-hmm.
They all have their own style, but I've never really, I mean, I've been impressed with Ty Majeski, but I just don't think
he is impressive.
Some drivers are destined to do well, and they belong in this series. I just think that Ty is better in a super late model, racing, the big money races than what he is, here in the truck series. He got an opportunity, he's taking advantage of it. You take your hat off to him, and all that. But I just don't see Ty as a Christian Eckes. I mean, Christian was just a whole different. A whole different breed, kind of, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Well, okay, we're going to go ahead and move on, though, now. We're going to move on to the NASCAR Truck Series race, because that actually took place on Friday night. We know that Christian Eckes won it, and it was a great interview to hear from him, but it was a really special night for the Craftsman Truck Series with Christian Eckes, who dominated the Long John Silver's 200 out at Martinsville Speedway. The win was his second of the season, his first at Martinsville, and the seventh in his Truck Series career. The pole sitter, Ty Majeski, came in second, followed by Chase Purdy, Nick Sanchez, Tyler Ankrum, Taylor Gray, and then also Raja Karuth in the 71, Sammy Smith finished in the 8th, Caden Honeycutt in 9th, and Corey Heim rounds out the top 10 drivers in that race. Let's see, there were 5 lead changes among 3 drivers. There were 11 cautions over 81 yellow flag laps. Despite Majeski starting on the pole, Eckes led on lap 1. He went on to dominate the opening stages before making his lone pit stop. It wasn't until lap 172 that he was able to reclaim the lead. In all, let's see, he made his lone pit stop on lap 104. He then restarted the race 19th and quickly returned into the top five. Again, there were caution flags that slowed the race at times. And again, he retook the lead on lap 172, led 133 of the 200 laps. The average speed of the race was 55.908 miles per hour. And it was a pretty exciting race. What are your thoughts, Sal, about the top 10 finishers of this race? We talked already a little bit about Christian Eckes.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, you got to look at the seventh place finisher, you know, Rajat Kurukh. You know, he continues to impress. You know what? And you got to know that Jeff Gordon thinks really super highly of him, because Jeff was once again in his pit box for this race. You know, he was with me at the beginning of the race. You know, kind of, you know, was walking with him. You know, I thought it was a lot better than seeing Bubba Wallace around him. You know, at least Jeff will, you know, steer him in the right direction. You know, give him, you know, more of a championship caliber, you know, advice. You know, to see Sammy Smith, you know, up there, you know, again, you know, with another top 10, Corey Heim, who we knew, you know, who's been really, really strong. Taylor Gray, this time instead of Tanner Gray. And, you know, what's his name? Dean Thompson was having a good race until he got an accident. He was right up in the top five, top 10 for a while.
Yeah.
He's one of our local boys from out here. You know, it's good to see him run up, you know, run up there. But, you know, as far as the finishers, you know, Ty Majeski and Christian Eckes, you know, probably two of the best. When you look up and down the list of all the drivers that were involved, they're probably two of the best short track drivers, you know, that we have out there, besides, you know, Jake Garcia, who finished 21st, you know, who ran with Bill McAnally last year, you know, just missed making the chase. But, you know, strong Chase Purdy, another short track driver, another strong one that came from short track driver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Nick Sanchez, who raced with Rev Racing, you know, and you know, so I mean, they put together a really good Christian Eckes and the team put together a really, really good program. You know, they stuck to it. You know, he, like I said, he got max points. You know, won both stages and then won the race.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a good weekend. Very good weekend for him.
It was indeed. The margin of victory was 0.644 thousandths of a second. There were a few people who had accidents. 27 drivers finished all 200 laps of the race. Then there was one other driver who finished two laps down. But there was a whole overheating issue taking Blake Lothian out of the race on lap 17. Dean Thompson had that accident that you referred to. That was on lap 145. Justin Carroll was out due to an accident. He was out on lap 158. Damaged vehicle policy. Lawless Allen was out on lap 166 for that. Two other drivers having accidents. Cam Waters, the supercars driver, that came over from Australia. I was really looking forward to see what he could do. He said he had a lot of fun racing and learned a lot, even though he had that accident that took him out on lap 176. Matt Mills was out on lap 193 because of an accident. So it was kind of a big night for a lot of people, but I was really happy that Cam Waters enjoyed himself and felt that he learned a lot in his debut in the NASCAR Truck Series.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, for this being Martinsville, you know, on a, you know, another short track, you know, everybody's kind of expecting, you know, what had happened at, you know, at Richmond, but it was a good run race. I mean, sure, Dirk, you're gonna have some accidents, you know, but all in all, you know what, it was drivers really showed a lot of maturity or change.
Yes, it was really good to see.
You got it
put out
more changes finally.
Yes, it was definitely good to see. Let's go ahead and cover the points report here, Sal.
Okay, as far as the points, we're going to see where everybody shook out after this weekend. We still have this page does not exist or is no longer available.
Oh, my. Mine just came up that way, too. Let's go over to NASCAR.com and see if we can get it there, Sal. The standings for the truck series.
Yeah, I'm wondering what happened with.
I don't know what happened there.
Okay. Anyway,
even though Time of Death came in second, he still leads somewhere, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's leading the point. He's leading the point to that. Next up, we have Haim. Haim, who's sitting in second with one win. Tyler Akron sitting in third. Actually, him and Haim are tied for second place. But they both have 241 points. And then 4 points behind them is Christian Eckes with two wins. He's already locked into the chase. And then fifth, we go to Taylor Gray. Well, T. Gray, it doesn't say which Gray it is. So it could be either Tanner or Taylor sitting in fifth. And then next, sixth is Nick Sanchez, who also has a win. He's locked in. Roger Carruth is seventh, who has a win. He's locked in. And then we got Matt Crafton, eighth. Brad Hensinger, ninth. And Ben Rhodes is on the bubble with the other Gray. 6 points behind him.
Tanner Gray.
Tanner Gray?
Well, they've got
what I see is
Taylor Gray in fifth and Tanner Gray in 11th, according to NASCAR.com.
Okay. Well, yeah, because the way I'm looking at it, they didn't I have Tigray.
No, okay.
The way they wrote it for
okay.
me, I don't know what happened here.
Yeah, I'm looking on the computer.
Yeah.
Are you looking on your phone?
No, I'm looking on the computer.
Okay.
Here we go.
Yeah, I'm not sure what happened there.
Okay. Oh, no. Yeah, I went to another drop down. Here we go. Yeah, okay.
So,
like
yeah, it's pretty cool. You've got a tie up there toward the top with Tyler Ankrum and Corey Haim competing for that second place spot. Just a few points behind them is Christian Eckes, so that's really amazing that it's as tight as it is with those first four drivers. It's really tight up at the top.
Oh, yeah, and it's amazing. You look at laps led, and Christian Eckes has 306 laps led, and the next closest one is Ty Majeski with 117. And other than that, it's Tyler Akron with 62. But you look at Matt Crafty, who's sitting in eighth, and he hasn't let a lap this season.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, Christian Eckes, by the way, also has the most stage wins of anybody else. So that's really good. That helps him points-wise.
Oh, yeah, it's going to help him a lot.
So pretty cool to see that. I do have some more audio. You think we ought to listen to, we listened to, the one driver. We listened to Christian Eckes.
Christian Eckes.
Yeah. Let me see what other audio we have here. Maybe we can listen to somebody else. Friday. Brandon Jones. Let's see. Let me look at this. That was for the Xfinity series. Yeah, all the rest that I have here is actually for the other series, so I don't have any more for...
For the truck
series? There's a short one here from Chandler. Oh, Cam, let's listen to Cam Waters. I played this on Monday, too. He raced in the truck series, but Cam Waters... it came all the way over here from Australia. I can't get it out here. And he races in the supercar series there. And he did a Ford media availability last Tuesday. And he had some really cool things to say in his interview. Did you hear that interview, Sal?
No, I didn't.
I wonder if they did a... They didn't do a post-race interview with him that I can see here. But we can listen to a few minutes of that if you want and comment about Cam Waters racing in the series.
Yeah, you can put that up.
Okay. We'll bring that up right now.
All right, everyone. Appreciate you joining us here this morning on a Tuesday. Cam Waters of Thor Sport Racing joining us here for our weekly call. Cam going to be making his NASCAR debut on the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series event this Friday night at Martinsville Speedway. If you've got a question for Cam, by all means, raise your hand in the Zoom platform. Or if you're having some issues, just send me a note in the chat, and I'm happy to ask your question for you. And, Cam, I guess I'll just start with just a general opener of just your thoughts and how you're feeling as we're just a few nights away here from your Martinsville debut.
Yeah, I'm absolutely pumped. Super excited to be, you know, finally having a race over here in a truck and, you know, always followed NASCAR and done a lot of table stuff myself on dirt in Australia. So to do a, you know, pavement oval is pretty cool to me and something I've always wanted to do.
I was going to say, how long has it been or how long have you been trying to try to maybe make something like this happen?
I've wanted to do it for years, but, you know, with what I do in Australia, yeah, that's always has been my focus. It still is my focus for sure. But we come to Martinsville, you know, 12 months ago and watched a race and kind of that's probably sparked a bit more interest in me to pursue it. And, yeah, just been chipping away in the background over kind of the last 12 months to make something happen like this.
All right, I'm going to open it up for questions here, and I'll just start with Bob. I know you're driving, Bob. Are you in a position there? Do you have a question for Cam? Bob's rolling, so he may not be in a position here. You're at the tech center, so can you kind of give me an idea of kind of what this week has been like as we lead into Martinsville? You've been on the sim, just kind of what has the preparation been like for this race?
Yes, we flew into Cleveland, then drove to Sandusky and did a seat fit and, you know, met the team and everyone on my truck, and that was amazing. And they're kind of blown away by how big Thor Sport was and, you know, their whole operation. I was blown away with how cold it was in Sandusky as well, coming out of an Australian summer. It was freezing there. We did a road trip to Charlotte and been here since Saturday or Sunday. So, yeah, been at the tech center, doing a bit of sim stuff today. So, you know, ramping up, you know, the efforts for the weekend and, you know, trying to learn as much as I can in a short, you know, period of time.
All right, we're going
to... Okay, I'm going to go ahead and cut it there. So that you and I have a chance to kind of talk about it. You know, we've got Shane Van Gisbergen coming over from Australia. Now we've got Cam Waters kind of tipping his toes into the water. Really cool to see that happening. And like I said, I did hear part of his post-race interview. He said he had so much fun and learned a lot after racing. This interview, of course, was before the race.
Yeah, it was, they appreciated, you know what, you could hear in his voice, you know what, I'm sure he would have liked a better finish. But, you know, just, you know, see him out there, you know, having the time, you know, the time that he had, I'm sure he had a really, really fun time doing it. You could hear it in his voice.
Well, I think someone asked him about the aggressiveness. Had anybody said anything to him about the aggressiveness of the Truck Series drivers? And do they race aggressively like that over in Australia? And he said, no, they don't. And, yes, he had been kind of warned about the aggressiveness of the Truck Series. But you made a good point earlier, Sal. They weren't all that aggressive on Friday night. It seemed like everybody kind of, you know, used their head a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, if it had been like around the, if it had been around like the, gosh, what do you want to say to, you know, week before, the race before, you know, at Richmond or even Daytona, you know, I'm sure he would have had a whole different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, I thought it was really cool that he's coming all the way over here. I think he's going to be racing some more, so I think it's not the last time we're going to see him. If you want to listen to more of the interview, we did play it on Thursday and on our pre-race, the preview show. So he gave a really good interview on Tuesday, and we played it on Thursday. And I would really encourage people to go back and listen to that for sure. But, Sal, let's go ahead and get into the Xfinity Series. They raced this weekend as well, and the I got the Cup Series. Let me go back and get the Xfinity Series. They raced the Dude Wipes 250 this past weekend, and it was pretty exciting. My computer is not helping me out here. Okay, the Dude Wipes 150 was on Saturday evening. We had two night races this week with the Truck Series racing on Friday night, then the Xfinity Series on Saturday night. Eric Almirola had a very emotional victory on Saturday night. He removed an asterisk from his career record and collected also $100,000 in the Dash for Cash bonus as well, with considerable helps, probably unintentional, from his Joe Gibbs Racing teammate Sheldon Creed. After an overtime restart, Almirola was able to grab the lead from Sam Mayer to win the Dude Wipes 250 under caution. When Riley Earps, the pole winner, and pole winner Brandon Jones and Ryan Ellis wrecked over in turn two on the final lap. So I was worried that they were going to call a caution, but it was after the white flag, so they let it go. Eric Almirola won the Xfinity Series season race at Martinsville Saturday. The first win of the year and his first at Martinsville, his fifth in the Xfinity Series. Sam Mayers came in second. Then it was Chandler Smith, Carson Quapel, Justin Allgaier, Sheldon Creed, Cole Custer, Sammy Smith, Jesse Love back up in the top 10 again, and Josh Williams. The pole winner, Brandon Jones, had to start from the rear. He had an unapproved adjustment. He ended up finishing 27th. The race ended after the first overtime attempt. Almirola took the lead from Mayer on that restart and was in the lead when the caution came out on the final lap. Almirola, that win, of course, gave him a $100,000 bonus as well for Dash for Cash. So the Dash for Cash drivers for next week at Texas Motor Speedway are going to be Sam Mayer, Chandler Smith, Justin Allgaier, and Sheldon Creed. The reason you don't see Eric Almirola on that list is that he is not entered for next week's race. So they went to the next four drivers, regular season drivers, and again, that's let's see, I just had it here. Sam Mayer, Chandler Smith, Justin Allgaier, and Sheldon Creed. Stage one was won by Eric Almirola, stage two by Justin Allgaier. There were 15 lead changes among eight drivers, 11 cautions for 66 yellow flag laps. There was a 10-minute red flag for cleanup after an accident on lap 72. The average speed of the race was 61.984 miles per hour. The margin of victory, it was under caution, so they don't really give us a margin of victory there. But your thoughts about the top 10 drivers there and Eric Almirola's victory?
Yeah, you had to feel bad for Sam Mayer. He should have had that race, that last caution, and everything that ensued after that, you know, gave Eric Almirola the win. But, you know, it was a good run. I guess Eric Almirola kind of deserved it. I mean, he was the more dominant car.
Mm-hmm. But, he led, I think, the most laps.
Yeah, and then like I said, yeah, he led 148 laps. And you know, I thought Sam Mayer was gonna get his win, and then Chandler Smith came from nowhere and tried to make a run at it. They're really mm-hmm. the only three cars that were strong. For a while, it looked like Cole Custer might have had something for him, and even
Sheldon Creed
98. No,
Carson Kwapel,
Riley Herbst.
Oh, Riley Herbst, yes.
Yeah, you know, early on, Jesse Love just never really fired off. I kind of thought that Jesse would have, you know, that he might have been, you know, one, you know, that could have, you know, that could have, you know, been a factor. But he was riding with a kid named Eli Wedehave. And this kid was 15 years old. He was born with a heart disease. He wasn't even supposed to make it past the first year. And
wow.
He's had a lot of complications, you know, going back and forth into the hospital. His dad was a, you know, they used to live out here, and actually I think they moved to Texas. And anyways, the kid passed away. He had another issue. Another relapse on Wednesday, Thursday of last week, and passed away Friday morning. Try to stop it. And so I mean, it's like that. Jason said it was all over social media, and you know, his dad.
I'm
said,
sorry
you
know, to hear
they
that.
Got 15, yeah, they got 15 years out of Eli, and Jesse. Went on social media and says, you know, he goes, I'm not racing for the 100,000. I'm not racing for the clock. He goes, I'm racing for Eli.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I know that was heavy on his heart because Jesse knew Eli, you know, when he used to go to the track with his dad to do photos. But all in all, you know, I mean, Jesse is just really, I mean, you know, another top 10, you know, he's really showing, you know, a lot of improvement, showing a lot of promise, you know, and, you know, he's going to be a force to be reckoned with. I mean, his dad brought him up right, you know, brought him up,
yep.
You know, through the ranks, you know, the way they should be bringing him up. So
I'm going to move out of the top 10 real quick. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. Sure. I'm done.
No, I was just thinking, Blaine Perkins seems to be doing better this year. He had a 16th place finish.
Yeah, he needs to get the better team.
Okay.
I really feel bad.
It's better this year than it has been in the past, I think.
Yeah. You know, he's really tried. You know, his dad's really got a lot of money invested in his program. You know, all we can do is just, you know, keep hoping, you know, that. You know, that.
Yep.
You know, just keep backing him, you know, keep supporting him.
Yeah, I guess. Now, Shane Van Gisbergen, another one of the rookies, he actually had an 11th place finish. There were a total of 24 cars finishing on the lead lap there. Several accidents and situations going on in the Xfinity Series. Akinori Ogata had a brake issue that took him out of the race on lap 40. There was a big accident on lap 70, took three drivers out. That was Corey Heim, A.J. Allmendinger, and Parker Retzlaff. I know we were hoping for good things for all three of those drivers, but that wreck ended their day early. Austin Dill had an accident that took him out on lap 71. It might have been part of the same accident. Lap 75, it was Kyle Weatherman that was out of the race. Jeff Burton was out on lap 242 for an accident. Leland Honeyman on lap 244. No, he was actually running. He finished the race, but multiple laps down. Then it was Brandon Jones had that accident that took him out of the late race right at the end there. He had the accident with Ryan Ellis and Riley Herbst, and that took them, all three of them, out of the race on lap 250. So that was on that last lap. any additional thoughts you want to share, Sal?
No, that's really it. I mean, like you said, you know, Blaine said, you know, getting that, you know, that better finish. Blaine has some, he has some issues early on in the race too.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he overcame them. Ryan C was another one, you know, that had. I think Ryan spun early in the race too. You know, still was able to finish on the lead lap. Other than that, you know, gosh, you know, to see Austin Hill, he was fired up. He was pissed
mm-hmm.
off.
Yeah,
you know,
nobody likes to be wrecked out of a race, that's for sure.
Yeah, and he's been real boisterous lately, you know, about different things going on the track and all that, so. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how the season plays out and how it finishes.
Yep, that's true. All right, let's go ahead and cover the points report, Sal. That is up there, so you'll be able to find it this time.
Okay, as far as the points, why do I keep wanting to go to the trucks? For some reason, my mouth just thinks that the trucks are just going to pop up. For the points, we've still got Chandler Smith leading the points. He's got two race wins. Cole Custer still holding on to the second spot with no race wins. Third is Austin Hill, who also has two race wins. And then we go down to the rookie, Jesse Love, sitting in fourth. Justin Allgaier sitting in fifth. Ryan Herbst in sixth. And then from there, we go to Parker Klingerman, 7th, A.J. Allmendinger, 8th, Sammy Smith in 9th, Sheldon Creed, 10th, Eric Almirola, 11th, who got that race win this past weekend, and Anthony Alfredo sitting in 5th. Now, I'm not too sure if Eric Almirola is going to be eligible for the chase.
I don't
because
think
he's not
so.
Running the full season. Yeah, he's
yeah,
not,
he's
running,
not
the
running the full season.
So
that would take out to Shane Van Gisbergen then.
Yeah, so you'd put in Shane Van Gisbergen into the 12th spot and Brandon Jones. Him and Brandon Jones on the bubble.
Mm-hmm. And there's only 2 points between them. So it's going to be tight there too. I think it's pretty, it's very tight right in there. Chandler's got the most playoff points. He's got the 3 stage wins along with his 2 race wins. Jesse Love also has 3 stage wins, and that gives him extra points, but he doesn't have the race wins yet. So that's why we don't see the points racked up there. But the other driver with a lot of points is Austin Hill. He's got the 2 race wins with 1 stage win that gives him 11 playoff points. We know those playoff points are a factor as we get into the race and closer to the playoffs. So.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's going to be, we've seen it every season so far, how important those playoff points, how they come into effect.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeedly do. They do come into effect, and it's always a big deal. So every point means something. So even the drivers who have 1 playoff point, it gives them 1 more point. And in a lot of cases, it can help them change their position in the standings with just that 1 point. So, for instance, neither one of these guys have playoff points. the example I was going to give is A.J. Allmendinger is in, he has got 192 points. Sammy Smith has 191. 1 extra playoff point for either one of those drivers would make a big difference in their case.
Oh, yeah, it'd make a huge difference.
And so something that's why we take a look at that and kind of keep an eye on that throughout the season, so that everybody knows kind of how tight it is and how important each one of those positions are. I was going to look here at the Xfinity series to see if there's any news that we want to bring up. Most of it is sponsorship news. Oh, you remember last week that Joey Gase throwing the bumper?
Yeah. He got fined for that.
He got fined for that, but he also turned it into a sponsorship opportunity. Joey Gase and Bumpers That Deliver forge a dynamic partnership amid the viral track alter sensation. So he took what happened last week and turned it into a sponsorship opportunity. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
So I think the same thing happened with Dawson Cram, if I remember correctly. I don't remember what his sponsor is, but I thought it was pretty cool that they made that negative situation into a positive for the race team.
Yeah, and, I thought he was going to get a bigger. Fine than what they gave him, but I guess.
You know what I think it was, Sal? I think it because nobody expected Joey Gase to do something like that. He's usually pretty mild mannered, so to see him get that upset, it was a first offense for him. So I think they didn't want to go too hard on him, but at the same time, it was a safety issue. Him throwing that big sheet metal out there on the road with cars moving.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it definitely was.
I think that's why it wasn't as severe as maybe we would have seen from somebody else who maybe is more of an occurrence for them.
Yeah, I think they could have a little bit more, maybe an anger management. I mean, sure, it was just a spur of the moment anger thing, but I think maybe a month or two, anger management, just to make sure he's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you. So anyway, I just think that the there was a penalty in the Cup Series, too, I think, wasn't there last week? And I was, oh, for Denny Hamlin. I was thinking maybe they didn't give him a penalty, but I was thinking even if they didn't take the race win away, I was thinking maybe they should have taken at least the playoff points for that race win away. What are your thoughts about that?
You know what? That whole thing, you know, it's already over. I mean, what are you going to do?
Well, like I said, the only thing I thought that might have been appropriate would be to take away the playoff points. I know that NASCAR didn't feel that they could do anything after the fact, but and that they're going to do better in the future as far as reviewing those restarts. So if there is a penalty, they're going to give it to him. But, it's like he got by scot-free this time and is set up as the example of what not to do.
Yeah. I don't know. They played every angle. Every angle was already over. They didn't do nothing, you know. I mean, they're not going to do nothing. I mean, they're not going to take the win away, you know, points or anything. So, I mean, what good is it? I mean.
But you would have been okay if they would have reviewed that footage and made the call that night. Before he celebrated, it would have been okay to take the win away at that point.
Yeah, it would have been okay to do it right away. You don't look at it. You know what? They could have thrown the yellow and ran the yellow and looked at the replay and see if they're going to do anything. You know, just ran them under yellow. You know.
Mhm. Until they determined who the winner was. But yeah, that's really something. But it's kind of forced NASCAR's hand to really look at it a lot closer in the future, I think. So we'll see what happens. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the Cup Series because they race this weekend as well. And boy, the Hendrick Motorsports teams were on fire. They had a podium sweep at Martinsville this past weekend, and William Byron won that race. He has a penchant for milestones. In Sunday's Cookout 400 at Martinsville, he got another. So last year, Byron picked up his 300th NASCAR Cup Series victory for Hendrick Motorsports at Texas Motor Speedway. And this year, they were celebrating 40 years. A 40-year milestone, and William Byron picked up the win again, this time at Martinsville for Hendrick Motorsports. So it was his third win of the year, so he's already on fire. The second at Martinsville and the 13th career win. The pole sitter, Kyle Larson, finished in second place, followed by Chase Elliott, Bubba Wallace, Ryan Blaney, Joey Logano, Tyler Reddick, Alex Bowman, another Hendrick Motorsports car, Ryan Preece, and Chase Briscoe. Byron got the lead for the final time by pitting first during the final green flag pit stops and then taking the lead when they cycled back through. He held the lead for a late caution that forced an overtime finish. Stage one was won by Kyle Larson. Stage two was actually won by Denny Hamlin. There were 13 lead changes among 8 drivers, 5 cautions for 51 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 76.096 miles per hour. The highest finishing rookie of the race, let's see if I can get that. The highest finishing rookie of the race, shoot, I lost my page here.
Carson
Hocevar, thank you. I had it, and then my page jumped, and I totally lost it. So thank you. He was the highest finishing rookie of that race. So let's take a look at the points report. I mean, not the points report, but your thoughts about the top 10 drivers there.
Yeah, it was Byron was just – he was really strong at the end, and you know, he's really you know, I was making fun of this iRacing driver, you know, and you know, but man, he's really, you know, everybody, I mean, even Kyle, I think Kyle Busch still doesn't believe what what he's doing.
I know, it's amazing.
I'm sure a lot of drivers up and down the board, you know, are just like, you know, who is this guy? But
I think
Ty Gibbs started
a precision driver though because of his sim racing experience.
Yeah. And Ty Gibbs had another good run, and then he ended up finishing. He ended up finishing a lap down in 19th. I still think he's going to get a win before the season's over. He's been running up close a lot. But like you said, this was the week for Hendrick Motorsports to flex their muscles, and
they did.
And, yeah. So what happened with Denny Hamlin?
Oh man, what did happen? I was driving back from Texas, so I was listening on the radio, but I was also keeping an eye on traffic, so I missed between stuff there.
I missed the last five laps of the race.
I wonder. Let me see. Be able to get it on my phone here, Sal. Let me see. Sometimes they give a lap by lap thing. And I can tell you here in just a second.
I thought he was up there, but maybe he wasn't.
He was for a while. I remember them talking about him being up there for a while. I don't know if I can. Yeah, they don't have a replay of the race that gives you the lap by lap what happens. So I can't go back and look at it. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
But I thought the race was, it sounded like it was pretty good. And Hendrick Motorsports, they weren't up there at the beginning, but, man, they were all there at the end, including Alex Bowman with that eighth place finish. Any other drivers you want to say anything about? I was kind of impressed to see Stewart SHR cars up in the top 10.
Yeah, I know. You see the, well, let's see who finished up there. Ryan Preece.
Mm-hmm. And Chase Briscoe.
Ninth. Chase Briscoe, 10th. And then, where did Noah finish at?
Noah finished in 20th.
20th. Noah finished 20th, yeah. Yeah, I'll finish 20th. So yeah, Stewart Haas Racing had a good week.
Yeah, and there weren't that many accidents in this race either. So these guys were out there racing for sure throughout the race and put on a good show.
Yeah, it was a good show out there. Like I said, I seen bits and pieces of it, and then I missed, like, I think the last five or six laps I missed, but I'd already known William Byron had won because somebody did a spoiler alert and spoiled
mm-hmm.
it. So as I was watching the last clip away, I knew the last six that Byron was going to win it. So it was a strong showing for HMS.
Mm-hmm. And there were a couple drivers.
Another good finish for Joey Logano, finishing sixth that second week in a row. He's had good finish.
Yeah.
Getting his stride back. So I'm sure we'll see. We should see a win out of Joey before the end of the season. He's always good for it.
Yep. He's usually pretty good for it. So he had a rough start, but he seems to have really turned the ship around very quickly. And like you say, the last couple of races has been really good for Joey Logano. Todd Gilliland, a 13th place finish. Eric Jones finishing in 12th place. So there are a few drivers that had decent runs in this race at a short track like Martinsville.
Yep. We're going to see what do we got next week? We got Texas coming up, so they're going to get back up there on the fast track. So see how they see how all these drivers I'm curious to see how they
how they do on the 1.5 mile
they,
track.
Yeah. How they adjust now, you know, to racing with racing fast again.
Yes, yes. The margin of victory in this race was 0.550 seconds. David, we haven't heard this name in a long time. David Starr was out on lap 311 because he had a steering issue. John Hunter Nemechek was out on lap 396 because of an accident. And those are the only two drivers that were out because of incidents. Everybody else from 35th on, finished either all four drivers who finished all 404. No, I'm sorry. There were only 12 drivers who finished all 415 laps. Wow. That's amazing. And all the other drivers finished a lap or more down. So starting with Christopher Bell at lap 411. So he was the furthest back. He ended up in 35th place, so he missed it by four laps. He was four laps down by the end of that race. Any thoughts about so few drivers being on the lead lap?
Yeah, you know, we haven't heard much about Zane Smith either. Zane Smith has finished 31st.
Mm-hmm.
He was last year's truck champ? Yeah, he was last year's truck champion.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, we haven't heard much about him. We haven't heard much about Josh Berry, who came in highly regarded by Tony Stewart, to be one of the guys that was gonna, you know, be somebody, you know, all the drivers on Stewart Haas Racing are gonna look up to.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a 25th place finish. Daniel Hamrick is still struggling in the Cup Series, 28th place finish. Kyle Busch, 16th.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on with that RCR team, but I just don't think that him and Austin Dillon are good.
They're not matching up very well. Austin's had a horrible start to the season. Where did he finish
Austin.
This week? Yeah, 34th place finish. He's just had a horrible, horrible season.
Yeah, he's had a horrible season. But, I mean, that's normal for him.
Yep. Okay, so it really is a horrible finish for Austin Dillon. And Kyle Busch seems to be struggling as well, so it may not be all his fault. He finished in 16th place. But let's see where they are on the points report, Cal.
Okay, on the points we have, we got Kyle Larson leading the points. He's got one win, four stage wins. Second is Martin Truex Jr., who has zero wins, one stage win. He was another one that was voicing his opinions about the way this race was run. Second week in a row, you know, whining. Denny Hamlin, third in points with two wins. He's locked in. He's got two stage wins. This is William Byron's third win. He's sitting fourth in points. He's got zero stage wins, but he's got the three race wins, you know, which is leading the series. And then fifth, you have Ryan Blaney, zero wins. Six with Chase Elliott, who still has that. William Byron and Ryan Blaney are tied, but William Byron has the three wins, so he's already locked in. And then you got Chase Elliott in six, who is still looking for that win after his comeback last year after that accident. And then seventh is Ty Gibbs, and the top eight is Ross Chastain sitting in the eighth spot. And then from there, then we go to Tyler Reddick in ninth. Alex Bowman in tenth.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's my fault. I apologize.
Yeah. Ross Chastain is 8th. Tyler Reddick is 9th. Alex Bowman is 10th. Christopher Bell in 11th. Bubba Wallace in 12th. Chris Buescher in 13th. Joey Logano, 14th. Finally up there in the top 16. Kyle Busch at 15th. Chase Briscoe is on the bubble. And below Chase Briscoe is Daniel Suarez. But Daniel has a spot over Chase Briscoe because Daniel has that the one race win. So basically it's Chase Briscoe and Brad Keselowski. Chase Briscoe on the bubble with Brad Keselowski right below.
For sure.
The highest rookie Josh Berry is the highest rookie in points at 23rd.
Okay. Very interesting. Yeah, it's kind of tight there at the bubble. 10 points separate Chase Briscoe in 16th and Daniel Suarez in 17th, but 2 points separate Daniel Suarez from Brad Keselowski. So I think that's going to be tight there for sure at that bubble.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is. We'll see what happens as the season progresses. Like I said, we got Texas coming up this weekend, and I guess they said next year NASCAR's going to go back to no racing on Easter Sunday.
Oh, good! They announced that.
I heard something about that. They're toying with the idea again about not, you know, giving the drivers, you know, Easter Sunday off, you know, not having them race. I think it's a good idea.
I know Dale Earnhardt Jr. Was real vocal about that. He thought it's a shame that the last 3 years that we've raced on Easter, even though they race later in the day, it is a holiday, and a lot of people, it cuts into people's holiday.
Oh, yeah, especially, you know, you think it's not so much the drivers, but you think about the teams, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you know, the teams, the team members, you know, those involved with NASCAR, you know, concession stand workers, you know, the guys that are the EMTs, you know, the track safety. I mean, I'm sure if they took a vote, I'm sure they would get a huge vote that, you know, let's not race on
on the holiday.
Sure, you know, let's take it off. I mean, but we'll see what happens when.
Yep, for sure. I just got a text message from my daughter. My granddaughter has declared that she would like for me to make deviled eggs the next time I come visit. So I guess I'll be making deviled eggs when I go to Chicago next. Sal, are you going to be at the racetrack coming up here if it doesn't rain? Oh, I lost you. You're back. All right, can you hear me? Oh, I brought. Okay. Sal is back. Okay, I hear you now. Go ahead.
Last thing I heard was deviled eggs.
Oh, yeah. My granddaughter wants me to make deviled eggs the next time I come to visit. So I guess I'll be making some eggs when I go up to Chicago next. kind of weird that she would make that request.
I just go to Manny's and buy some pastrami and call it a day.
There you go. Maybe we could do that, too. Sal, going to be at a racetrack coming weekend? Huh?
Yeah, I'm hoping to be at Irwindale. Hoping to be at Irwindale if it doesn't rain for the car store.
Yeah, I still am amazed that you have so much rain out there on the West Coast. It's been crazy. You know what? Go ahead.
It is amazing.
Yeah, it's been crazy with the rain out there. So Jay is here. We've got a rare moment here where we can kind of, we've got some extra time, and I'm going to bring Jay into the queue here. And Jay, what's going to be your first hot topic? Maybe we can get a take from Sal on the first hot topic tonight.
Well, that changed. My first hot topic was that, was that an open invite, and what day do I need to be wherever I need to get deviled eggs? Because I love deviled eggs, so that's where I came into the conversation.
No, yeah, my granddaughter. My granddaughter made that request for my next visit, so go ahead, Sal.
Yeah, my niece makes them, so I stick to one or two. Not a big damn devil.
Okay.
Well, I can pop one or two at a time. So, no, the hot topic I know I posted this afternoon of kind of looking at is RCR. They're kind of struggling this year. So if Sal's got some input on that, I would love to hear it.
Sal, here's your chance. You talked a little bit about this already, but as we make this transition into hot topics, what are your thoughts there? What happened to Sal? Okay. I'm bringing him. He dropped
anyway.
Again. I'm going to bring him back into the queue. Okay, Sal.
You know what happened was I got the second generation earbuds, and if you even touch them or you rub your head and it's close, I didn't know it hangs the phone up, so I went to scratch my ear, and I touched it, and it hung up again. So now I know this set, I'm putting this set away, because the other set, I can scratch my ear, and they don't go off, but anytime you touch them, it hangs up the phone. So I got to find the setting to fix it. So what was the topic besides the deviled eggs?
RCR, Bush and Dylan, they're having a bad year. We talked already a little bit about this. But you want to give your hot topic take on it?
You know what? It, for all the years that Kyle Busch has been in the series and all the different teammates he's had at JGR, Joe Gibbs Racing, you know what? And then to come to a team that was already on a downer and to try and lift them up the way he thought he was going to do it, you know, he's not young anymore. Then to have a driver like Austin Dillon, who just can't seem to get anything together, you know, and basically Austin Dillon idolizes him instead of looking at him as a good, strong teammate. You know, it's not going to work. I mean, RCR they're never going to be a powerhouse until they get rid of Austin Dillon and get another driver the caliber of Kyle Busch, so this way they can lean on each other for data and stuff like that, because I just don't think that Kyle doesn't have the confidence, and he doesn't have the, and I don't think he would ever give Austin Dillon the time of day, you know, as far as him giving him, you know, feedback, you know, on some of the tracks, you know, racing grooves, you know, whatever it may be. And I just think that until they get rid of Austin Dillon and bring someone else in, that Kyle's just going to be another Daniel Suarez, Chase Briscoe, another Eric Jones, you know, Ryan Blaney. I don't even think he's at Ryan Blaney's level right now with the way Kyle's been driving. And I think Austin Dillon, he doesn't realize, but I think Austin Dillon has a lot to do with it.
Well, I hear some of your points there, but I'm going to disagree with some of them too. I think that Kyle Busch is one of those drivers that has been vocal about the fact that they have a limited amount of time to practice. And unfortunately, he's also one of those drivers that really needs that practice time to shake his car down. And he's not getting it. So I think that that's part of the reason why he's struggling. Austin Dillon, on the other hand, it almost feels like he's gotten worse since Kyle Busch has come on. Kyle Busch started out really well. I thought he was going to do really good over at RCR, but this season just hasn't been the season that they were looking for. So you brought up a good point that maybe he has gotten older and it's not as easy for him to make some of those kind of transitions. So, you know, that could be part of what's going on. But man, it's Austin Dillon. And did they make a crew chief swap there? Did he change? I think he just recently changed crew chiefs. Well, whoever he changed to, I don't think it's really working out very well with Austin Dillon. And I think it was somebody that he's used to working with. And for some reason, it's not working this season. So I would anticipate that they're going to be making some changes over there, maybe in that regard, maybe with crew chiefs or something to kind of get this thing kind of rolling again, because it really has kind of hit a stall for this season anyway. Jay, what are your thoughts?
Well, you're right. They swapped crew chiefs for starting just with Austin Dillon, as that's kind of where you were at. Keith Rodden is being moved to a leadership role now with RCR, and they're pairing him back with Justin Alexander, who is paired with Austin Dillon for his four victories, and I believe going even back to history within the Truck Series and Xfinity. So the one thing I look at, though, is last year Kyle Busch came over, okay, new organization switching from Toyota and JGR to Chevy. We saw promise. It wasn't the greatest of seasons, but Kyle, I believe, picked up three victories. They did kind of fall off towards the end of the year, and we saw Austin Dillon, the three team, kind of coming along behind him, but then it fell off, and this year has been horrendous. And to start the season, just felt like it was one of those of things just weren't, they were wrong place, wrong time, starting at Daytona, Atlanta, that happens. But we're eight races in now, I believe, and it just hasn't continued. And I heard, and I don't want to give any quotes or anything, but I heard there were some issues as far as between driver and crew chief as far as strategy and some other things, that it was a point of they were just not on the same page, period. So that's why the crew chief situation was swapped. But when you look at Kyle Busch, too, there I think they've already made two pit crew changes in these first eight races, because there, too, things just aren't working. I also look back, though, at history of in recent history. When Tyler Reddick was there, we saw him come in and win some races and seem to be the promise right on that verge of RCR returning to form. Again, the three team was kind of coming up along with them. Then we had whatever happened, and Tyler Reddick goes over to 2311, and we got that drop-off again, which is where Kyle Busch comes in. So that's where I'm like, that, you know, they're getting all these little key things in place, but it's like they can't maintain, and that's what concerns me.
Yeah. Sal, I know we're kind of dragging into this, but do you have a follow-up that you want to share?
Yeah, you know, I kind of thought when Kyle sold the team, the truck team, you know, that he, you know, you got to go back to Kevin Harvick, you know, when he owned his truck team, you know, and Kevin said publicly, you know what, I just have too much on my plate. I got to sell the team if I expect to win at the cup level. So he sold the team, you know what, and his performance, you know, went up. And I thought when Kyle sold the truck team, that his performance would go up, you know, but I mean, it seems like it just dwindled. So maybe that distraction or else that fire that Kyle had working with the younger drivers and watching them succeed, the ones that did succeed, you know, then to come over to this team and have Austin Dillon, who's worse than a young driver, you know, and Kyle sees that the kid's not going to succeed. He just doesn't have no talent, you know, and I mean, that can affect your driving a lot. I've seen it happen out here in the short tracks, you know, with some of the teams, you know, that I cover out here, you know, and, you know, the level, you know, it just drops. And I just think that Kyle doesn't, there's no fire at RCR and without no fire, you know, I mean, you just don't have no, you have no drive, you know, you get in the car, you know, you try to make things happen. And I mean, and I think mentally, it's hard to make something happen. I just think that when he had the team, it was completely different than when Kevin had his team, because Kyle's team was successful. Kevin's team wasn't really as successful as what Kyle's was. And I think having all those young drivers around him, I think that's why Kyle was as successful as he was. And I just think that with Austin, you know, there's just nothing there, and, there never will be nothing there, like I said, until they get rid of him and bring somebody else in that can relight that fire. But then, like Jay said too, a lot of it does fall back on the crew chiefs, car chiefs and all that. You know, it takes a, I mean, look at what Rudy Fugel did coming from Kyle Busch Motorsports and then jumping on William Byron's, with another young, staying with the other drivers, and he's been able to put, William Byron, up on top of the NASCAR ladder, and made him, somebody that could look to. Maybe Kyle needed Rudy Fugel in his box, and Richard let him go, or Kyle let him go, whatever happened. And but I just think that I just gotta fall back on Austin not giving Kyle the fire and the desire that he needs, because when you watch your teammate just falter every week and not even improve and just get worse and worse. It's going to take effect.
It's going to have an effect, yeah. Sal, you are welcome to stay on with us if you want to continue with the Hot Topic Sound Off conversation. I really didn't mean to put you on the spot, but I thought you had something to say there. So
yeah,
it's
like
up to you.
My wife's on her. She texts. She's on her way home, and I'm tired. It's hard doing this. Show right when you get off of work. I walk in the door at 5, I have time to, I don't even have time to unwind, then I got a call right away. So, I'm still in work mode, waiting for my boss to text and tell me what went wrong today and stuff like that. But I'd love to stay. One of these Mondays I'll stay on, but I'm just burned out. It was a long
week. That's okay. I understand. And we appreciate you staying on to give your thoughts as well as your follow-up thoughts about our first hot topic tonight. And, Sal, we appreciate everything you do. So thank you so much.
Sure.
All right, you all
have a good weekend.
Yeah, I appreciate it, too. And enjoy those deviled eggs, wherever they end up. I know Jay will end up with some of them. Somehow they're going to get shipped to his house.
They might not look like deviled eggs if they get chipped.
You just got to put them in dry ice, and you'll be surprised how they last.
Oh, there you go.
They'll be good
there
to
you
go.
Okay,
you,
I got it.
Yeah, I'm pushing. So make sure and make Chad does it of his own.
Okay.
All right. Good night, you guys. I'll talk to you next week. Okay.
Okay, thanks, Sal. Take care now.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and do my follow-up. I thought Sal brought up some good points there. What's his name? Kyle Busch has always been a really good mentor to so many different drivers. And so the fact that he's dropped his team and he's not mentoring, he might still be mentoring, let's face it, because drivers come to Kyle Busch and ask him questions, and Kyle Busch is one of those guys that whoever comes to him with questions, he's going to be there and talk to him and try to help him if he can do that. So, but the fact that he lost the team, there could be some things going on with that too. And I know that was a conscious decision to do that, but I do think that there's some dynamic there that's not working, whatever that dynamic is. It's hurting both of the teams. And I hope they can work it out, and I hope that they can make whatever adjustments need to be made in order to get these guys back on track. I think Austin's more talented than what we're seeing this year. He hasn't been the most talented guy we've seen at the racetrack, but this year is just a horrible year for him, and I think he has more talent than what this year is indicating for him. So, and we know Kyle Busch is a talented guy and can get the job done, but he's going to need some things to happen differently, I think, within the organization in order for that to happen. We're all speculating because we don't know what's going on, but I do hope that they figure it out. Jay, what's your wrap-up on that?
Well, and that is something of you talk about with Kyle Busch, of not only his talent, but the organizations he's been in have been top-notch organizations. Even with then going to, where did he start in the truck series? Billy Blue Motorsports was a solid. He was able to fill in that gap with his driving talent. As he began to build his own organization, got the right key people in the right places, and able to continue to build on that, has a very high level of expectation and performance, first off from himself, but then also from his team. And we saw that a couple of times with his teams, even with new young drivers. He said, hey, the equipment is there because I'm coming in winning races. Greg Biffle came in, win a race. Why aren't you winning races? You know, and we talked about that. You know, he may not have done that in the best mm-hmm. way, but he has that high bar, and that's where he's at with RCR. The key is to how do you get to that where both levels are. When you talk about then Austin Dillon, and you're right, Sharon, you said that he obviously has more talent than what's being shown in his results right now this year specifically, but is he one that can lead and turn an organization? And it has primarily been on him, as we've seen a couple other drivers come through RCR, which that's why with Tyler Reddick, I really thought maybe that was the future of RCR. Whatever happened there didn't materialize and develop long term. But there are certain drivers who can lead an organization when it comes to changes. Look at our Brad Keselowski mm-hmm. with RFK. Okay, he can come in, whether it be from the race setup side or the personnel and office side. I don't think that Austin Dillon is the one that can do that. Kyle Busch may, but you got to give him that opportunity then. And we talk about, go back through history, whether it be Roush Fenway, when they first started and had their struggles and had five cars and then had to downsize or whatever, they're starting to come back. You talk about an organization and any kind of change that, you know, they say when you're turning an air carrier or something in the ocean, you don't turn and make an immediate turnaround. It takes time. So trying to give that, but, you know, and I look at it, last year was the honeymoon. The honeymoon's over now. Now it's time to long-term marriage, you know, and going in a good direction. What's it take to maintain that and keep going in that better direction and building upon it?
Yes. Yes, I agree with you. It's going to take some time. But, you know, last year when Kyle Busch first made that transition, it seemed like he did really well. You pointed that out earlier. So it is a little bit of a head scratcher how it could go downhill so quickly. And I've been trying to search for answers on that myself. But let's go ahead and go to the next hot topic. What do you want to talk about next?
Well, I know we don't have any actually on the board. The one I'd kind of like to go back to, again, I didn't get to come on Thursday, but there were two or three that kind of tied together, and they've kind of been still in the news here this week. The possibility of SHR reducing or selling out completely. Again, it is speculation. There's some rumors out there. So there's a lot of talk. And then on the flip side of that, you have, well, if they do, the interest that's there. We know 2311 has talked about expanding. Trackhouse has two charters, two full-time drivers, but also then two other drivers, Zane Smith as well as Shane Van Gisbergen, under contract but nowhere to go with them. Right now they're in the Xfinity or being loaned out to another organization. So there would be interest in the charters. And then Junior Motorsports, that one always comes up when it comes to a cup charter being available. So I know you guys covered it on Thursday. What was the consensus there? And then I'd like to throw my, I don't know if it's worth 2 cents, but at least one.
Yeah, I think that the general feeling, Andy was doing the show with me that day, and I think the general feeling was that Stewart Haas Racing has been struggling over the last several years. Everybody's very much aware of that. But one thing I was pointing out earlier in the show is Ryan Preece and Chase Briscoe both had top 10 finishes this week. So maybe they are trying to figure something out. Or so part of the talk was that maybe they're not going to sell all the charters, but maybe just two of the charters. Maybe they'll keep two and sell two. So the question becomes, who do you keep and who do you sell? The cost of charters have gone up so much, that could be a topic all of its own, that it makes it really hard for a lot of these organizations to buy charters. When, you know, a few years ago, it was maybe $2 million to get a charter. Now it's $20 million to get a charter. So it kind of makes you wonder who would be in the running for, you know, two charters or four charters possibly at $20 million a piece. That's a whole heck of a lot of money. And who has that kind of money that they'd be able to buy those charters? So apparently somebody read that there were four organizations that are looking for charters. You brought up 2311 and Trackhouse Racing. We know Dale Jr., Junior Motorsports, has an interest in moving up into the Cup Series, so they're certainly contenders. One of the things that I brought up earlier is Josh Williams from Junior Motorsports and Noah Gregson, who was with Junior Motorsports at some point. They're both now at Stewart Haas Racing. So, you know, when we talk about the fact that Chase Briscoe and Ryan Preece are the two that finished in the top 10 this week, that would mean that the two charters that they might consider selling would have been the other two drivers, Josh Williams and Noah Gregson. So that would kind of eliminate, I think, it might not totally eliminate them, but it makes you wonder if Junior Motorsports would be interested in buying the charters that of their former drivers, which would mean that we would be Ryan Preece and Chase Briscoe that would be on the outside. So another thought
Sharon,
is that
I just
maybe Stewart Haas, go ahead.
I hate to do it, but you keep saying Josh Williams. It's Josh Berry. You got
Josh Berry. Why
mixed
do I say
there.
Josh Williams?
I don't know, but that second time I was like, yeah, she's sticking with it. I got to correct that. It's Josh Berry that's in that number four.
Thank you. Josh Berry, yes. I don't know why I said Josh Williams. You're right. It's Josh Berry that I mean. So, yeah, it makes you wonder how that might play out. If Stewart Haas Racing keeps the two drivers and then sells the charter to Junior Motorsports. So that seems to kind of fall in place a little bit if you think about it from that perspective. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. The only thing we can do at this point is to speculate on what could possibly be happening. I was wondering who the other team was, the fourth team that was might maybe interested. Do you have any ideas on that, who that fourth team might be?
I do, or what was led to believe anyway through some articles and the news on the radio of just, again, you mentioned it, speculation, possibilities. I don't know that I've seen anything of any kind of confirmation or true indication even that this is happening. it's just kind of the way things are going. We talk, starting with the SHR, you mentioned it, they have been struggling. They lost several key sponsorships. This past weekend, mm-hmm. if you were watching the Sonny D car, it wasn't on Josh Berry's car. It was on Ricky Stenhouse's. They've picked up a couple of little ones, but they also lost, starting with Anheuser-Busch, moving over when Kevin Harvick left, moving over to Ross Chastain. Eric Almirola retired and Smithfield left. That was another huge one. Not a full-time all 36 races, but carrying a major load for the number 10 machine. Now, Noah Gregson did bring some in, so they're kind of in that boat where they may need that capital as far as selling the charter. And you said $20 million. The last one that Spire Motorsports bought was actually at $40 million. And that's been the biggest thing that Dale Jr. said was, I'm not paying that. I mean, that is way too much to invest, you know, when it comes to that. So we may have to wait and see if that comes back down or not. To hit on the fourth one, the article I read, the fourth one that was given an indication anyway or possibility of looking for the charter would be Legacy Motor Club. They come in, kind of been rebuilding, Jimmy Johnson coming in as a part owner in that, and the direction they're going, Toyota still looking to expand. We got 2311 now, Legacy Motor Club, that if they're looking to get kind of on equal numbers as Ford and Chevrolet, that they might be the one to also look at a third team and charter. Mostly, though, I would say you're looking at Trackhouse, 2311. They have both, Justin Marks, like I said, already has four drivers under contract with two teams. Denny Hamlin with 2311. They've run that third car occasionally for select events. Has always expressed that the desire to continue to build and increase as they're capable, and then Junior Motorsports coming in as a new team. Those would be your top three anyway. Legacy Motor Club, I can see where that statement is made that they may be in the running, but again, it goes back to that overall dollars and cents.
It does. Noah Gregson, by the way, left Legacy Motor Club last year, so that would be an interesting scenario that would build up there too. The only thing I guess I can say at this point is it's going to be interesting to see how this does play out. I agree with Dale Jr. The price of these charters has to come down, and people have to stop and just say, I refuse to pay that amount of money for a charter. It's hard for me to say this because I'm not a business person, but it doesn't seem to be good business sense from where I sit for somebody to pay $40 million for a charter. So we'll have to see how it plays out. I just don't have a whole lot more to add there. Stewart Haas Racing, if they don't sell those charters, that something's got to change within the organization. And I do see some little glimmers of hope that maybe they are trying to right their ship and do things better for these drivers to get some better results. But they seem to be like glimmers that you see here and then they're gone there. So we'll have to see if they can sustain some kind of a turnaround there at Stewart Haas Racing. And I think that could be the determining factor on whether or not they sell charters next season. What are your thoughts, Jay?
Well, I think you do have something else to say as we got about 4 minutes, 3 to 4 minutes here. So if you wanted to say that now.
I can go ahead and do that. At this time of the show, for especially our first-time listeners, and as a reminder for everybody else, we are going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, but we are going to continue the rest of the conversation. We'll continue to record the rest of that conversation, and it will be available as part of our bonus overtime material on our podcast. What I do is when Jay and I are finished here with our conversation, I'll go out on Twitter and Facebook to let you know that the podcast is available. And at that point, you can fast forward to the 2-hour mark, and then you'll be able to hear the rest of that conversation on the podcast. So we give everybody a heads up at this point, just so that nobody's caught off guard and wondering what's going on, that we're stopping in a mid-sentence with the recording or with the broadcast. But just know that we are going to continue to record, and you can hear the rest of that conversation. So, Jay, go ahead and give us your thoughts now on our topic.
Well, there's several layers, and it goes back to even with RCR. You lost Kevin Harvick and Eric Almirola, two veteran drivers who can lead an organization. We're in that position. Kevin Harvick, obviously, when it comes to that. Not that these drivers that can't, but even if you look at Chase Briscoe, I know that as the veteran of that group, is still relatively young when it comes to the Cup Series and hasn't had the greatest of success. And I won't go down that road, but again, of you come into a team that isn't performing at a top level, because even Kevin Harvick, while leading the charge, was having a tough time. So there's some organizational things there. But he's being put in that position. Now, you mentioned the promise of this past weekend. It was Chase Briscoe and Ryan Preece. Ryan Preece is one of those, I think, given the opportunity and development, however that takes time, and especially if you aren't seeing the results at the top end, you need sponsors. Sponsors are saying, hey, we're only seeing a little bit of promise. We're not going to invest a chunk or, you know, a good amount. So that's catch 22. Look at Noah Gregson, and, you know, he struggled with his first year in Cup. Obviously, we talked about, or you mentioned getting let go from Legacy Motor Club, or the split between them. There again, we've seen some, I feel, very solid to start the year. He's had a couple of rough races, but he's also had several, I think the first three or four races, he was the one leading Stuart Haas Racing. But that was right around the top 10, just outside, maybe a little inside. It was not winning races, top fives. They're not there yet on a weekly basis. It's getting back to that level, because that is what then will in turn sell the sponsorship. Josh Berry is another one. Had some starts last year, was really good in the Xfinity Series, was kind of a, I want to say, the top recruit, maybe looking at it coming out of the Xfinity Series to move up to Cup, and Stuart Haas Racing got him. But if the organization is struggling, it doesn't matter what driver. You can bring Kyle Busch in. If the organization is struggling, even Kyle Busch may not look at the top of his game. So they all need to just find that, and we talk about this, any team, all the little key components to make the team gel, the team to the organization. So I think it needs to be given time, and I don't know if the resources, the funding is there, as well as Tony Stewart. And this is the other aspect I wanted to look at. It's always a good news, bad news thing. I would hate to see NASCAR lose Tony Stewart. We lost him as a driver, as a full-time driver, but to see him come out of NASCAR altogether would be a tough one to swallow. I know the sport has survived losing all of its top drivers, you know, from some aspect or level. Some of them gone completely. Others have moved into leadership roles, which is what Tony Stewart did. And I think that's a good thing. However, and again, I'm not the one paying the bills, so I know he made a statement. I think that was at the beginning of the year. If things don't improve or change, we're going to make some wholesale change. And there again, there wasn't anything specific, but that's kind of what sparked this even at the beginning of the year, that conversation of, you know, what could happen. Is that selling charters? Is that firing all the crew chiefs? You know, again, you can go whatever road you want, because it's really then what are you going to read into it? So that would be tough, just as losing a driver like Kevin Harvick or a sponsorship. The good news, though, we talked about it, four organizations of having Dale Jr. as a Cup owner, I think would be huge. 2311 or Trackhouse expanding. We've seen what Trackhouse did. So there's good news. It can be filled. And when I look at Trackhouse, when you mentioned the price of the charters, if you recall, that is Chip Ganassi Racing. He went out and bought out the organization, two charters, the team, the shop, the equipment, all of it for a better price than what he could pay another team for just the title of a charter. I don't know if there is actually a physical piece of paper or whatever, that charter, but it represents something anyway. Justin Marks and Trackhouse, again, bought out an entire organization with two charters for half, because that's where I think that he bought the two and the team of Chip Ganassi Racing for $20 million. And now we're talking about Spire Motorsports. All they got out of their deal for $40 million was the rights to that charter. They didn't get any team or any shop, any equipment, to the best of my knowledge, I should say, with that. It was just for the right to have access or the right or the bonuses that go with that charter.
Wow. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. That's all I can say. But you're right. It would be a little bit of a loss if Tony Stewart were to leave NASCAR altogether. Ever since I've been following, there's been a Tony Stewart in NASCAR. So, and we have been lucky to see other drivers, when they retire, move into ownership type positions, like a Brad Keselowski or Jeff Gordon or whoever. Kevin Harvick is in the broadcast booth, and you know, we still see these drivers in NASCAR. You know, I think about Jeff Burton is another one. Dale Jarrett goes back a ways, but it's nice that we still see him on TV once in a while and hear his opinions about what's going on. So, and we know Tony Stewart always has an opinion, so we still need Tony Stewart in this or in NASCAR. So it's going to be fun to see how it all plays out, Jay.
It certainly is, and like I said, could be real interesting depending on how it develops and the direction it goes. The only other thing I got for tonight, like I said, I know we didn't have any suspensions or whatever to talk as far as hot topics, but I know a lot of what was talked about today on SiriusXM. Obviously, the Martinsville race in and of itself from the whole weekend, but eight races in, when you look at the season, it really is William Byron / HMS Hendrick Motorsports versus Denny Hamlin / Joe Gibbs Racing as far as top contending teams and organizations. The only other one to win a race other than outside those two organizations is Daniel Suarez with Trackhouse Racing from Trackhouse Racing, sorry.
Yeah, it does seem like it's building up that way, Toyota versus Chevrolet. Chevrolet won most of the races at the very beginning of the season, and then when we came to the short tracks, it seemed like Toyota kind of came on strong, and they were winning the short tracks. But then we came to Martinsville, and that went out the window a little bit, and Chevrolet's came back up on the stage with that podium finish from Hendrick Motorsports as they celebrate their 40 years anniversary. So it makes me wonder. Ford still seems to be struggling to some degree. I see glimmers of hope that maybe they're kind of getting things turned around. But it's got to be frustrating from their vantage point when you see such domination that we have seen this season from both the Toyota and the Chevrolet camp. So I'm not sure what's going to happen. If maybe they're peaking, you know, the other possibility is these guys could be peaking too soon. And what happens is eventually organizations catch up with whatever it is that they're doing that's making them better. And then everybody starts doing it. And all of a sudden that competitive edge is gone. And so it makes it harder then for those drivers to sustain that kind of performance. So I would say it's really good to see what we're seeing between those two organizations, but it's going to be hard for them to sustain that for a whole season.
That's certainly the case. You're right. And you talk about the Fords. Again, we have our defending champion, Ryan Blaney, came on really strong at the end of the year last year. Started firing on all eight cylinders, if you will, when the time was right. At the dirt track, they like to say the pay window's open, it's time to go. And we saw that from Ryan Blaney. And they are right there just outside, I say top eight because JGR and HMS take up about four each of eight spots. Ryan Blaney, I believe, sixth or seventh this past weekend. I didn't do our fantasy update yet, and that was my driver. So I know he was right in the mix anyway. So it's not that they're completely out to lunch and just being dominated, but then, like you said, Stuart Haas Racing. This week it was Chase Briscoe and Ryan Preece. No, Gregson's been up there. There's these ones that are there every other week or, you know, every third week showing that promise. It's will that promise develop? And unfortunately, I know it's even better than last year. We saw that with William Byron of looked really good regular season going into the playoffs. Martin Truex, another one. And I know we can't even begin to describe what happened to him when it came playoff time last year. Regular season champion, and if it could go wrong, it did go wrong, and if it couldn't go wrong, it did anyway for Martin Truex last year. So
yeah,
you know, and again, if you're at the top of your game, winning races, how do you improve upon that if you're already leading laps and winning races? These other organizations are looking for, hey, where can we get better? Brings them up to par at least. So now you got a little bit more of a battle, but. Yeah, right now, I mean, you look at it, Final Four or Final Eight could be two organizations or possibility. I know Toyota and Joe Gibbs Racing had it a few years ago where we really thought the Final Four might be the four Gibbs cars. You know, it was that close to happening that way. HMS certainly has that capability as we now got Alex Bowman, again, just outsider, you know, the top, I believe he finished seventh or eighth because it was first, second, third, and seventh or eighth. I don't remember where Bowman finished.
Mm-hmm. Let me look.
No, granted, that's one race. And you mentioned it when it comes to that.
Bowman
they weren't real
eighth.
Great there in the fall. Eighth, okay. I knew they were all four top ten when it comes to that. And we've seen that. HMS is the one organization to have done it at Dover. It got brought up in an interview with Mr. Hendrick that the 1-2-3-4 finish. The 1-2-3 finish has only happened four times. So they put a lot of emphasis on that. We all know there is some great history and ties to Martinsville when it comes to Hendrick Motorsports. This weekend could not have gone any better. You look at the paint schemes they had, the people they had there, with the exception of Mr. H, unfortunately. But that's one of those, you almost call it destiny, you know, for it to happen there on their 40th anniversary.
For sure. Can I just kind of deviate here just a little bit and talk about William Byron? William Byron, his story is such a fascinating story, and I think there's a lot of implications in that with regard to the future of NASCAR. And he's not the only driver that's done this, but, well, maybe he is one of the only drivers that have done this. He did not have a traditional background coming into NASCAR. He did not start as a four-year-old or a five-year-old racing gold carts out on the track. He came in as a teenager and decided that he wanted to do some e-racing, or i-racing, I mean, and he learned on a computer, and he has such finesse out there on the racetrack, and he has proven that you can race on iRacing and come out here on the track and translate that information pretty well to the actual track conditions. And it's just amazing when you think about where he's come from and how well he's doing at NASCAR's top level of racing. I don't know that he gets enough credit for what he's done. He started as a teenager in iRacing, and look at what he's doing in the Cup Series. It's just phenomenal. But I think it could open the door for future iRacers to come into NASCAR.
Here's one of the aspects I take to it, and there again, Mr. H addressed this. And I'm going to go back in history a little bit again of look at a couple of the greats. And even go back to Richard Petty and Dale Inman, both very good to slash great individually. You put them together, you got an unbeatable dynasty. When I first started becoming a NASCAR fan, it was Jeff Gordon and Ray Evraham. They went their separate ways. Both had a little bit of success, but not what they had together. Chad Knaus, Jimmy Johnson, same thing. You know, yeah, they were still good slash great individually, but together, I mean, it was just tough to beat. Right now, when, and I don't remember which year it was, when William Byron first came to HMS, he was paired with Chad Knaus, actually. So you're talking about a great crew chief paired with that up-and-coming good driver. They were good and building, but there wasn't just that dynasty connection. Bring in Rudy Fugel, who was his crew chief at Kyle Busch Motorsports when William Byron drove in the Truck Series. Since then, in 3 years, I think, is that now where they've been back together in the Cup Series, we have seen that final piece come together for that team, the victories they've had, the seasons they've had, the championship runs they've had, that's where it's at, you know. And that's what it is, you know, and all these teams are looking at it. We talked about Austin Dillon trying to be repaired with Justin Alexander. It's that total team dynamic. And right now, Rudy Fugel and William Byron, I mean, they're reading each other's minds. They're thinking their thoughts before they even have them from the other one. And it's just, it's there. So that's a big key element. I know it doesn't get talked a whole lot about it in racing as much as other sports, but it is not about one. That yes, the driver talent has to be there. Yes, the crew chief, whatever, has to be there, the pit crew or whatever. You got to keep in mind, it's always that total team effort. And those two right now, I mean, not only are they on the same page, they wrote the book together.
Yeah, no kidding. They certainly have some good things going on. But now that we're leaving the short tracks and we're going to be heading to Texas Motor Speedway, a 1.5-mile track, they've got a lot of momentum going right now. I worry about the momentum kind of continuing when we get to the 1.5-mile tracks. Are we going to see other drivers kind of come to the top there?
Well, there's certainly going to be a different mixture because, most drivers do have that. But when they broke it down, you look at William Byron's wins so far this year, it has been a super speedway, a road course, and a short track. I don't remember if they gave the statistics. I know what Larry McReynolds said. He's not exactly bad or too shabby on the mile and a half. So from what I heard, and I don't have his statistics pulled up, but I don't think you have a whole lot to worry about when it comes to their mile and a half program either.
Yeah, that's where it starts to separate, I think. So we'll have to kind of see how that plays out at Texas Motor Speedway. And I hope we get some good racing at Texas Motor Speedway this weekend. I know some people are disappointed with the racing that we see. I do see racing taking place throughout the pack at tracks like Bristol Motor Speedway. It's just not the same kind of racing, you know, the action-packed kind of racing that I think a lot of people and fans thrive on. It's a different type of racing that you see at Texas Motor Speedway than what you see at other tracks.
Yeah, that's one of those I know, and yes, there was that scuttle. I will say I was positively pleased with the callers that called into SiriusXM today. Dave Moody talked about it on the way home from the race Sunday night, already hearing on social media anyway, it's tough to pass. There wasn't the racing or whatever. The callers that called in today, 80 to 90% of it was all positive and feel good, taking what did come from the weekend. I know there's always improvements that can be made. But Martinsville, and here's the thing I don't understand with that, and I know I've gotten on my soapbox as far as what fans are looking for, man. Dave Moody, I think he had a stepladder with his today, asking what fans are looking for. But Martinsville has never been. When you talk about back in the good old days there was racing there, and Sharon, I'm going to feed Indy on this one, that wasn't racing. It was who could power and push each other out of the way. And due to the necessity, I get it. But as he put it, fans want parity. They want to see not one person dominate like Jimmy Johnson did or one team or organization. You want parity. You want new teams coming in that are competitive. You want the parity. We got the next-gen car. So if you've gone from 15 teams that are capable of winning week in and week out and now have 25 to up to 30 that are at least out there running all the laps and, again, maybe not winning capability, but up there being competitive, well, what do you have now? It's going to be hard to pass because you're all equal. So what do you want?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And one of the things that they were trying to address on the short tracks was the tire wear and putting strategy and decisions back into the hands of the drivers and the crew chiefs. It's all interesting. I love it. That's why I'm a race fan. So I want to see if these guys are still rising. You know, the cream always rises to the top. I'm just wondering who's going to be the 1.5-mile drivers that are transitioning. They're doing well on the road course. You mentioned it. William Byron's got a road course. He's won on a short track. He's won at the Super Speedway. So he's showing that. Are there any other drivers that are going to be showing that as we continue to move in now to the 1.5-mile tracks? I think we might see some different names up there.
Like I said, certainly within the mix. I mean, these top four teams from the two organizations are not going to go away. You're going to have to catch up to them, and whether it be a little bit of strategy or tire management. You talked about that, and I don't know how Texas will come into play. I know that's one that's used the traction compound. Yeah. I know that they've gone back and forth with the PJ1 and the resin and whatever. That is one they do try to work with to try and develop some better racing options. But even this past weekend at Martinsville with the two-tire stop, I know Joey Logano got highlighted for it. Ryan Blaney, they also made that call. That upper groove did develop a little. And here's where Moody pointed it out of the passing, especially when it comes to up front or whatever. You had Denny Hamlin and Chase Elliott. You know, it's hard to pass. Well, you're talking about two top championship contending teams and drivers. I know Denny Hamlin doesn't have the championship. Chase Elliott had a little bit of a slump last year due to a variety of reasons. But they're not going to be easy to pass. It's tough to pass because you're battling top competition. Exactly. You know, and that's where he goes back to, you know, as he threw out going back in the day, you know, that was easy to pass. That's because you only had 10 teams that were capable of it. So going through the other 20 to 30 in the field did make it look easy and easy to pass because they just weren't as competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get off the ladder. I followed it about halfway up the ladder, so I'll get off that soapbox ladder and come back down. I only went about halfway to what he went.
Okay. Well, it sounds like he made some really good points. So we'll see what happens. Do you have any other topics that you want to bring up here for us to talk about?
I do. Just to kind of wrap up here, I know last week I did bring it up when it came to Bubba Pollard, but Junior Motorsports, doing a fifth team in the Xfinity Series, brought in that short track ace, if you will. Bubba Pollard at Richmond started age 37, come home sixth place. This past weekend, they utilized late model star Carson Kvaapel, came home fourth.
Mm-hmm.
Big shout out to the driver, big shout out to the organization, and again, the future of NASCAR. If you can have drivers like that come in and make a one-off start, first career start with a team like Junior Motorsports, top equipment and everything goes, you're seeing the talent. So I just, big shout out to Junior Motorsports, given the opportunity, those two drivers specifically capitalize on it. That's what I like. I'm the future of NASCAR, the new faces, whether they be Australian or not, whether they be young or old. I think Bubba Pollard's 37, you know, and finally just got that opportunity. Does that mean he's going to be full-time next year? Probably not. But if we see him come in and mix it up with these Xfinity Series regulars once, twice, three times a year, I love it.
Yeah, I was listening on the radio, and they were saying that Carson Kloeffel looked so much like his dad, Travis. You know, everybody was taking double takes when they saw Carson at the track. His dad was there, but they said he's a dead ringer for what his dad looked at like at the same age. So I thought that was interesting too. But yeah, you're right. I give them kudos as well for bringing in Bubba Pollard and now Carson Kloeffel. I think it's going to be fantastic to see who else they bring in. We saw Cam Waters racing in the Truck Series race this weekend as well. He ran into a little bit of bad luck, but he said he had a great time, similar to what Bubba Pollard said. They really enjoyed coming into NASCAR and racing, and that the experience was fantastic, and that they learned a lot having the experience of racing with the drivers. So I think it's I like seeing more of that happen, and especially what they're doing is they're taking the one team that they don't have a full-time driver for, and they're putting in different drivers in those teams. So I think it's great. I hope we see more of it, and I think we'll see more teams doing more of that as they stabilize their own team. What better people could you bring in to learn from to help your other drivers do well on those types of tracks than to have somebody come in like Carson did this weekend? He's going to be able to give great feedback then to the whole organization at Junior Motorsports on how they can do better on those short tracks, and especially Martinsville. So there's a lot to be gained by doing that, and I hope we see more of it as we continue to see success with the drivers that they are bringing in. It's not going to be perfect every time, and I don't think it's reasonable for us to expect it to be great every single time, but I like that they're thinking outside of the box and doing something different that can help their organization. I think it's a great move.
I thought so, and just the fact that they did both perform well, I wanted to give a big shout-out to both of them, obviously coming from the although the asphalt side of local late model racing.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't go any further than that, because that goes back to the whole charter system and a new team coming in, and I don't want to go down that road. We're coming up on the top of the hour anyway, so I've been up on the soapbox once already. I'll stay off of it for that one for tonight.
Oh, okay, we'll save that for another day. Sal and I enjoyed the show tonight. We had the post-race media interview with Christian Eckes. We were able to listen to the entire interview and kind of comment on that. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to that, I really encourage everybody to take a listen. We had a little extra time after we did the truck series, so I know we played it on Monday night. We played the Cam Waters interview, at least a part of it. And I played even less of it tonight, but we had a little bit of extra time, and I thought it would be great to kind of replay at least a portion of that interview as well. So that's on the earlier part of the show here tonight, if anybody wants to go back and take a listen there. I'm going to do my sign-off first, and then we'll go to you, Jay. I know we're going to have the preview show coming up on Thursday, and Brian should be able to help us out with that this Thursday. And so I hope folks will tune in for the podcast. We usually put that out early afternoon on Thursday. And then Sal and I will be back next Monday night to review the racing that took place at Texas Motor Speedway. We're going to have three races again with the Truck Series, Xfinity Series, and the Cup Series. So definitely looking forward to that as well. So I am Fan for Racing site on Twitter, Fan for Racing blog and radio on our website, as well as Facebook. So I'm looking forward to talking about the upcoming races at Texas Motor Speedway on Thursday. Jay, what do you got for us?
Well, you know me, I always like to talk about racing, so I appreciate being able to be on tonight and the opportunity. I know Thursdays haven't been I got other things going on Thursdays, and Brian being able to step in, appreciate that. And I know you guys got routine going there, especially with the fantasy side of it. I know that it's maybe a good thing I'm not tuned in on Thursdays, because I might get back into the gambling side of it, and I've been pretty good about that, so maybe I do need to let Brian
in. Andy filled in last Thursday.
Oh, that's right, yeah, and Andy always what was that?
Yeah, I was just saying that Andy filled in this past Thursday, and it was really great to have him back on the show as well.
Yeah, I know him and Tommy both have been really busy with work and other things as well. So I know during the summer stretch especially, it seems like we all get kind of busy, but such a great team here at Fan for Racing. We can be able to do that, and the fact that it does give them the different perspective, I think we cover we do go from West Coast to East Coast, actually, with Sal on the West Coast and in the Northeast with Andy. My background coming from the North, now in the South with here in Mississippi, and Tommy in the Carolinas, and you there right dead in the center. So such a great mix here at Fan for Racing. But you can follow me on social media, Fan for Racing. Facebook, Michael Hoosman, Mopar MJ8 on Twitter and Instagram.
You're trying to take over my handle.
I was thinking Facebook, and I started with the Fan for Racing.
Well, that's funny. Okay, well, I hope everybody has a great week, and we'll look forward to talking to everybody again this coming Thursday with our podcast, and on Monday with our review of Texas Motor Speedway. So thanks, Jay, for being available. Always appreciate everything you do as well. And it was kind of cool having Sal on the show with us a little bit tonight, too.
Yeah, and I know he's busy. Like he said, he's jumping on right as getting back from work. I know tonight I said I was going to be right on time as well, just walking in the door asking for 5 minutes to just kind of get settled down before I called in. So appreciate what everybody does to help put these programs together. But we'll all get rewarded because we're all getting deviled eggs, right?
Don't forget to send me your address. I don't know where to send
right,
them.
Yeah. I'll get right on that.
I'll have to tell my granddaughter she started something here.
Well,
okay,
talk about timing, because as I called in, like I said, just being on hold, that's what the first thing I heard was, hey, we're going to have deviled eggs. I'm like, I'm in.
Yeah, I don't usually talk about deviled eggs on our racing show, but it came up tonight. So thanks a lot, Jay. We'll see you on the other side.
All right. Have a good week.
Okay, you too.
Radio. Here's the podcast for our Martinsville NASCAR race review and hot topics. Sound off #NASCAR #RCA #short.